Strong winds will also affect Northern Ireland and Northern England, and accompanying the winds will be a band of heavy rain with wintry showers affecting the north of Scotland. The southern half of the UK will be windy but generally dry, with bright or sunny spells, maybe a few showers. Feeling very cold across the north of the UK, with a high wind chill factor, less cold in the south. And then by Friday, cold weather extends south across much of the UK, with wintry showers in the north and the east.
Thanks very much indeed, Stav. Now we continue our book of the week, Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life by Hermione Lee. By 1950, Penelope and Desmond Fitzgerald are living in Hampstead with their two small children, Valpy and Tina. Penelope is working as a writer, Desmond as a barrister. It seems they have the world at their feet. The reader is Penelope Wilton.
Between the summer of 1950 and early 1951, the Fitzgeralds moved to a much larger house, Chestnut Lodge, next door, which they took on a 7-year lease. Penelope dressed the children in Victorian-style clothes, and there were children's parties with proper party dresses and sashes and a wonderful tree at Christmas with gingerbread men and homemade decorations. There were drinks and dinner parties. There was a charlady and an au pair. The guests at the house were often writers and journalists. Friends remembered meeting Malcolm Muggeridge or Rose Macaulay at dinner there. People who did not especially like Penelope Fitzgerald would refer snidely to her Hampstead intellectual friends. They bought a sizeable car, a Ford Consul. Penelope dressed up beautifully for outings. Helen, her sister-in-law, remembered her on Easter Day in a lovely black taffeta dress, wearing a yellow turban as her Easter bonnet. There were regular family holidays, at home and abroad, to Greece, to Spain, to Ibiza, and to Harlech for beach holidays. They were living a comfortable, middle-class life. But they were living beyond their means. In 1950, the Halton Press decided to revamp one of its periodicals, World Review, and the lively, literary young Fitzgerald seemed a plausible choice of editors. The most impressive thing about their World Review was its internationalism. Perhaps the most remarkable scoop was publishing J.D. Salinger, the year before The Catcher in the Rye came out. In October 1952, leaving Desmond to manage the house and the magazine, and parking Tina with the Fitzgerald grandparents, Penelope went away, taking the 6-year-old Valpy with her, on one of the most improbable trips of her life. It was all the more startling because she was 3 months pregnant. She and Valpy travelled to a small town in northern Mexico. They stayed there for about 2 months and returned in January. Fitzgerald never explained the trip. Jean Fisher said it was just the sort of outlandish thing she would do. Her children supposed, looking back, that she was restless or escaping. She wrote up the journey for the magazine in 2 impressive pieces. On the 10th of April, 1953, Maria was born. In the summer, the editors announced, "This is the last issue of World Review in its present form." Having overstretched themselves, they were beginning to struggle financially. And 4 years later, in 1957, quite suddenly, the life the Fitzgeralds had made at Chestnut Lodge fell apart. They left Hampstead and went to live in Southwold on the Suffolk coast. Chestnut Lodge was left in a chaotic state. Much of this part of her life, Penelope Fitzgerald consigned to silence. The Southwold house was spacious, and Penelope made it look stylish. As in Hampstead, her Christmas decorations, like her homemade, beautifully lit ceramic crib, were a feature. The girls went to local schools, and Valpy went as a boarder to Westminster School. But he came home for the holidays, and they became full-time country children, in love with boats and horses. The children lived like aquatic animals, Penelope remembered, taking no harm. On a bright summer day, Southwold could be enchanting. But to live in it in foul, as well as fair weather, was another matter. Desmond stayed in London with his mother during the week, for work, and came down to Southwold at weekends. Penelope kept the Ford Consul, which she drove around Suffolk without a licence, on one occasion into a lamppost. The BBC commissions dried up. Desmond was drinking, alone in London. They began to have rows, every weekend, terrible rows in the kitchen about money with the children listening. They ran up huge bills in the Southwold grocers and had to avoid the shops which would no longer give them credit. They would buy things on approval, like a refrigerator, and then send it back and get another one. There were no secrets in a town like Southwold, a community divided into friends and enemies. As she says in her novel, The Bookshop, everyone could be seen coming over the wide distances, and everything seen was discussed. Everybody in the town knew who was in financial straits. The crash, when it came, was a public event. Early in 1959, Adnams the auctioneers were called in, and the contents of the Fitzgeralds' house were put out on the pavement. Everything had to go. Penelope remembered painfully, "All the things I cared about most were sold." To his lasting mortification, Valpy was taken out of Westminster School. An arrangement was made with Desmond's old school, Downside, which had a long tradition of taking care of the Catholic sons of former Catholic pupils. The smart Suffolk acquaintances fell away. Outside the little house, Penelope kept up a brave front. It was obvious to everyone who knew them that Desmond was drinking heavily. But Penelope uttered not a word about this, or their troubles. She did not want to ask her family for help. She felt it was her job to sort out the mess they were in. Tina remembered, "Mother said we were going to move to London." It was entirely Penelope's decision. 30 years later, she described the move. "Not being able to find a house that we could afford, we settled for a boat moored on Chelsea Reach. Her name was Grace, and she'd never been fitted with an engine, so there was plenty of room for us in the huge belly of the hold. Our great consolation was that a Thames barge, because of the camber of the deck, never sinks completely." When in later life she reminisced about her 2 years on the boat, she would make a dramatic, fascinating story out of it. But in reality, this was a bleak, difficult, and dangerous time for the Fitzgeralds. Living on the boat was no gypsy-like idyll. Grace was insanitary, bleak, and unsafe. A total disaster area, in Valpy's view. The big black tarred hulk sat on its flat bottom on the stinking mudflats of the Thames at low tide, and started to leak as the tide rose. It was always on a slope. Every time the tide went out, the boat sank slightly to one side, and all the cupboards jammed. The girls had to remember to get out everything they needed, like their school uniforms, while the tide was up. At the bow end was the bedroom shared by the girls, who were often woken up at night by Desmond, making his way late and drunk through their room to his bedroom next door. Penelope slept in the living room on a single day bed. For the rest of her life she would not have a bedroom of her own, but would sleep in a bed that turned into a sofa in a sitting room. She would be up before anyone else and fastidiously tidy her bed away, and she would go to bed after everyone else. There was never very much to eat, and the girls were not allowed to help themselves to food. They lived off fried potatoes, fried eggs, toast. Desmond went down into the river mud up to his waist most days to patch up the boat to stop it sinking. They often used the public baths in the King's Road, where they would be issued with rough towels and a bar of soap. Penelope sent Tina and Maria, now aged 11 and 8, to the French Lycée in South Kensington. But this only lasted a few terms. Presumably, they couldn't pay the fees, and for a while they had no schooling. Later they went to the Catholic London Oratory, but they spent much of their time left alone on the boat or running wild. For days on end, they went unwatched and unsupervised, often cold and on the edge of hungry, but taking this ragamuffin life for granted. Valpy, meanwhile, aged 14, was at his well-appointed, respectable boarding school, Downside. On his holidays, he found the whole setup mortifying and chaotic. Worried friends visited occasionally, though on the whole Penelope kept them at bay. They brought helpful gifts, like woolly hats and scarves, but didn't like or weren't allowed to ask how and why the family had come to this. Evidently, Penelope was determined to keep the ship afloat herself. From the moment they arrived on the boat, she started teaching. First at the Italia Conte Stage School in Clapham, then at Queensgate School in Kensington, and at Westminster Tutors. For very many years, teaching was her day job and her main source of income. Desmond was never violent or aggressive, but he was spending money foolishly. He would come home loaded with presents, guilt offerings. One night, he came back drunk, started to walk round the edge of the barge, lost his footing and fell, struck his head and landed in the mud. It was amazing that he was not killed. Penelope heard the thud and called an ambulance. Desmond was taken to St. George's Hospital at Hyde Park Corner. He had cracked his skull, wore a huge bandage for weeks, and thereafter had a scar and a dent in his head. Early in 1962, Desmond confessed to intent to defraud, was put on probation for 2 years, and his career at the bar ended. At the age of 45, he signed on for the dole, and a few months later, he got a job selling encyclopedias door to door for a basic monthly pay of £10. Penelope's silence on the subject of Desmond's failure was almost impenetrable. She buried the catastrophe. She refused to complain to her friends, and she barely spoke of it, even, or least of all, to her children. On the morning of the 24th of June 1963, the girls woke up to find that there was water in their bedroom. That was not a good sign, Maria thought. They went off to school, and Penelope went to her teaching. During the day, Grace began to sink, and that evening she was towed away from the other boats, still afloat, but sinking. 2 days later, Grace sank. Not completely, but enough for most of their possessions to be lost, and for the barge to be fit for nothing except eventually to be towed away to the Essex marshes to be broken up. Most of Penelope's family documents, photographs, letters from her mother, childhood mementos were lost to her great distress. Some books were salvaged and remained in her possession, their pages forever crinkled and stained. She went back to her teaching the next day, looking more than usually dishevelled, and said to her class, "I'm sorry I'm late, but my house sank." Desmond was no help. God knows where Daddy was. For the first 2 nights, Penelope and the girls were taken into a shelter on the King's Road. They were then sent to the London County Council Reception Centre for the Homeless in Hackney Wick. Homeless families lived in one room with bunk beds and ate in a communal canteen in the basement. Maria remembered Hackney as a terrible place. She and Tina had to make the long journey from Hackney to the London Oratory School. They stayed there for 4 months until they were moved to another temporary reception centre in Bromley. Desmond was not with them. For the children, this was a traumatic time. The homeless centres were the worst thing that had ever happened to them. They were at the very bottom of their fortunes.
Penelope Wilton was reading Penelope Fitzgerald, A Life by Hermione Lee. It's abridged by Libby Spurrier, produced by Joanna Green, and is a peer production for BBC Radio 4. Thank you. Now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency.